Welcome to Guys We Fucked. Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne.
We're sorry about last night.
Fucked. The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the anti-slut shaming podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
And today's episode is brought to you by Replay. It's a comedy web series produced by New Form Digital. The show follows Allison Lee, an aspiring DJ who gets more than she wishes for when she's stuck repeating her disastrous 25th birthday party over and over again.
Oh, no.
You guys can watch this show on Go90. It's a free mobile entertainment app. To watch the first episode, you can go to www.replayseries.com. And then new episodes come out every Wednesday only on the Go90 app, available on iOS and Android phones in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Also, come see us live.
Tonight, it's May 13th. It's Friday. Come see Nacho Bitches at 11 p.m. at New York Comedy Club, co-hosted by myself and Blair Saki. Tickets are $10 with the code NACHO.
Nashville, Tennessee. Corinne and I will be inside you on Saturday, May 21st, as part of the Wild West Comedy Festival. We're bringing the Guys We Fucked touring show to your town. It's going to be at Zany's Comedy Club in Nashville. Tickets are $22, and there's a link to purchase in the description of this episode.
And that show is at 11 p.m., and then we'll be back in New York City Monday, May 23rd at 8 p.m. for the Guys We Fucked test tour dates that are happening at Subculture. Standing room tickets only are available for that night, but if you want to sit down, you can buy tickets to Monday, June 20th show. And again, doors are at 7, show is at 8. It's really fun, and we need your help to kind of get the show going.
Yeah, come out for a good time. And then if you're still in New York City, Saturday, May 28th, Wendy Starling and I are co-hosting the one-year anniversary, actually, of Glamour Puss at Zinc Bar. Show's at 7:30, doors at 7. It's going to be a wild night, and there will be titties.
And these are not our only dates. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Go to our social media because there's other dates, maybe like things in the Midwest. Instagram is Philanthropy Gal, Christina Hutch, and Sorry About Last Night. Same on Twitter. Go there.
Yeah, we have a lot of other dates, guys. So check them out. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. What did you do?
Oh, well, my mom I was supposed to see my mom for Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
She had experimented with a new natural sleep aid she found at Costco. Didn't go too well for her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so she called me and she goes, I'm really tired. Can you come next week or another time? And I was like, yeah, shit, that sucks. I'm so sorry. We were, like, ready to leave the house in Steven's van. And so I was like, oh, my mom took a sleeping pill the night before. Didn't go so well for her. So she wants us to come another time. So you want to go to a random town upstate and play pinball and go to strip clubs? And he was like, yes, I do. And I was like, fuck yeah. So that's what we ended up doing. He found this record store / vape shop / pinball arcade.
This was on Sunday or Saturday?
It's on Saturday.
Okay.
In Middletown, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we were done there, we were looking up strip clubs because I wanted to get a hotel because our roommate was here for the weekend, and I just, having sex in a hotel is just, it's more comfortable.
Better.
It's better.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about being loud. So I really wanted one of those like sexcapade weekends. I haven't had that in a really long time. So I'm really excited. Found a hotel, found the dopest strip club in a 40-mile radius. There was a bunch. And then as we went to the Bank of America ATM so that he can get cash out, he rolls down the window and he hears the sound of like race cars. And I'm like, I think that's an airport. And he goes, no, I think that's like racing. And he's like, let's go. So we went to this racetrack and watched race cars go around a 3/4-mile dirt track with amongst like camo jacket wearing, cigarette smoking, redneck people. And it was like, you know, I have some redneck roots in me because
right.
I used to go to NASCAR races and do that like tailgating shit.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of nice. It was really, we got so fucking dirty though because it was a dirt track. And so then we're like, well, let's go to the strip club now. So we go to a hotel. I shower all the dirt off from the racetrack and we go to the strip club. We pull in and it looks huge. It was called Mansion. And it's outside the sign that says Mansion. And it says, Trump, make America great again. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to suck. And so we went in. We were debating going in. And I was like, no, we're going to go in.
That would, if it said Trump, it would make me think it was like the best. Like for a strip club? I think it would be better.
I don't know. It was great. That's the moral of the story. Right. It didn't suck at all.
Right.
But when I went in and I showed the guy my ID, he saw my military ID and he goes, oh, you're military? And like, I got in for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but there's a military base in the area. That's probably why they're Trump people, because they're Republicans. So, cause that confused me, cause the strip club was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I have not, this was probably one of my favorite strip club experiences. The girls, it kind of sucked because the stage was above the bar, far away. You could not touch nothing. But the fucking asses on these chicks were like a mind blowing. Just like beautiful girls. They were having a really good time. And we always go to strip clubs like, this is either going to be the worst thing or the best thing. And it was amazing. And then I went to go get a drink and I was like, you know, we should get a lap dance from one of the girls. Like, who do you want? Kind of thing. And I go back, I go to get a drink. I come back and there's a girl in my seat and she's like this beautiful young girl in this, you know, lingerie, black lingerie getup. And Steven was like, oh, she was just telling me like the prices and stuff. We should totally get a lap dance from her. I was like, cool. She stands up. I go, oh my God, did you work at the Apple store in Soho 7 years ago? And she goes, yeah. And I was like, hey girl, it's Christina. She goes, oh, hey. I'm like, how you doing? And you look great. You look great. She did. She looked great. And it was so awkward. But then we went and got the lap dance, but she danced on him. And, but it was, she was so serious.
Mm-hmm.
She looked like she was performing surgery. But she was giving a pretty great lap dance, but her face and her body didn't match. It was weird. And then we got another one from this random chick that was just at the bar by herself dancing on the stool. We're like, yeah, you want to, can you give us a lap dance? That was really fun. And whenever I do this thing, whenever we go to strip clubs and we go back and we have sex that night, I move my body like a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And he like pointed it out. He's like, God, you're moving like you're fucking on Showgirls or something. I'm like, yeah, I know. I just,
inspiring.
Yeah, it was inspiring to see women dance hot. And then we had, I was the first time in, I would say over a year probably, that we had sex, but like full on, no time restrictions, no noise restrictions, no restrictions of any kind sex. Like I let him eat me out for a very long time, which he likes doing. And I'm just like, come on, let's wrap the show up. I gotta go, or I gotta go to bed, or I'm tired, or there's always something.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something interrupting it, or my roommate comes home or something. So it was really nice. It was just a nice, sexy getaway weekend. Saw a stripper I knew. That's the third time that's happened to me at a random strip
club. The third time?
Mm-hmm. Pumps was the first time.
Wow.
And then there was one in Pennsylvania that I was like, oh my God, we went to high school together.
I know people who are strippers. I don't think I've ever accidentally. I don't really frequent strip clubs, though, I guess. So.
Well, this strip club had a steakhouse attached to it.
Many do.
The food looked good.
Many do.
Speaking of food, you guys know about Blue Apron? Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you the best. For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I have gotten Blue Apron. I used to have a subscription to Blue Apron ages ago because one of my coworkers gave me a free trial. And it is fucking awesome. You learn how to cook. They only give you the exact ingredients that you need for the recipe, so you're not throwing away food, which is great. And they ship for free to your door. And it comes in this giant refrigerated box. It's so fucking cool. It's really fun. You can customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. If you don't like meat, or if you like a lot of fish, or whatever you want. And each box comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe guard. So check out this week's menu and you can get two free meals with free shipping if you go to blueapron.com/GWF. That is blueapron.com/GWF. Blue Apron. A better way to cook.
Yeah, I actually made crispy cod tacos this weekend,
really?
And it looked exactly like the photo on the card. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Good for you.
What else we're not kidding you about? This next sponsor, it's MeUndies. We talked about them before. Guys, they're super comfortable. Every pair of MeUndies is made from sustainably sourced modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton.
It's true.
And we know because we touched it and we wore it and it was on our vaginas. Nothing can describe the fit and feel of MeUndies. undies. Well, I kind of just did, but I feel like just try them on and you'll understand why it's called the world's most comfortable underwear. If you don't love your first pair of me undies, they're free. No questions asked. They'll just take them back, even if there's stains on them. I added that part. They have dozens of styles and limited edition prints. Like, oh, there's this splash print that they just released. It's really, really awesome. So make a statement with your underwear. Whether anyone can see them or not, remember Superman. I love that copy.
Oh, yeah, because he wears his underwear outside his clothes. I was like, why did they put that in there? Oh, yeah. Okay, I just got it now.
Oh, God. Shipping is free to any U.S. and Canada resident. Go to meundies.com/GWF for 20% off your first order. Seriously, they're pretty cool.
Yeah, they're really soft. Oh, I love the bikini cut. Okay, we're going to read a couple emails before we introduce our guest for this week. If you want to email us, it's sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. The first email, the subject line is Autistic Guy Having Girl Troubles. Hi, guys. I love your podcast. Listen every week, and I thought I'd write in to get your advice. I'm on the autistic spectrum, albeit extremely high-functioning, and although I actually have hooked up with girls on dates fairly often in the past and enjoyed it, I've never had a girlfriend at 24 and find this a bit depressing. It's hard for me to make romantic connections, and the last and only time I did fall in love, she'd been married very young and didn't want commitment. Bad timing on both our parts. I've been doing online dating but never know what to message with, so it's hard getting out there with that and my missing subtle social cues. What I'm asking is there any way to flirt and to ask women out that isn't creepy or obtrusive? How would you want to be treated? I grew up with strong women, and I think catcalling / nice guy behavior is repulsive. Nice guy behavior is repulsive. But I'm never sure how to approach someone on a train or in a bar without feeling like I'm being a creep. Any advice you could give would be really appreciated. Thanks. 20-something. Aspie 20-something?
Yeah, like that? Asperger's.
Oh, is that like the shortened
Asperger's lingo? Is like a less, it's a form of autism.
Right, but Aspie is like short for Asperger's?
Yeah, I think, I think maybe you probably have to have it to refer to yourself as.
Right.
I wouldn't be like, yo, this Aspie friend of mine.
Yeah, because that's like rude and shit. Yeah. I would say, you seem like such a sweet guy from your email. I couldn't imagine you being creepy, although I'm only judging you from a couple words that you wrote to us. I don't like getting hit on while I'm on a train.
I was gonna say never approach someone on a train.
A bar is an okay place, but I think online dating is cool because if you want to get in an online dating, the first thing to message somebody is whatever interests you about that person's profile. And I would get really specific. I personally like to get to know a guy in person. So I'm very cut to the chase. Like, hey, how are you? Free this night? Let's get to know each other over dinner. Through my experiences on a three-way dating app with Steven, I really like the way he communicates because he usually starts out with something like, hey, you seem like a really fun person. I would love to get to know you, blah, blah, blah. It's the standard line, but it's not creepy and it's very endearing. And then just pick something really specific out from their profile that you genuinely find interesting and they'll want to talk to you about it. Yeah, don't hit on people in bars or in trains because I feel like no one wants to be bothered. I might be wrong, but a bar is a more appropriate place. And I don't know. Pickup lines that I've had. One of my favorite pickup lines was when I was at a restaurant at a networking event, and this waiter was slamming hot. I left my jacket, went back in to get it, and as I was leaving, he goes, "Have dinner with me?" And I was like, "Oh,
yeah." But would I have worked if he was ugly?
Nope.
Yeah. So,
but he had the confidence of a hot person, and he was pretty hot.
Right. Well, he was hot. Yeah.
So I don't know. You might be attractive. You might not be. I have no idea. But you probably have a general sense.
Yeah. Have confidence without being like over the top. And I mean, I think just be interesting, which is easier said than done. But you know, if you're going to talk to someone in a bar, like have something to say after hello. Like have a fucking plan in order. Like how you're going to handle.
Well, what are lines that you hate hearing at bars? Like.
I truly hate when anyone, because I am never someone who's going to a bar to
meet up with. Yeah,
I would never do that. So I've had people who try to hit on me and then end up talking to them and it was totally fine and I enjoy the conversation, but truly have something interesting to say.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be smart and interesting to have those things to say though, mm-hmm. or just fucking have read a book or something or read a news story and then just tell me about it.
Yeah.
Like just make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Because if nothing comes out of it, you both get an interesting conversation.
Yeah, that's fine. That's not going to bother me. No problem at all. This second email is, how do you tell the Tinder guy who ended things that you are pregnant?
Oops.
So recently I found out that I am pregnant and I am freaking out. I would say. Earlier last month, this guy who I had been on and off seeing told me that he wanted to stop things and proceeded to delete me on all social media. Do I even have to say something? And what the fuck is the protocol for this? I have weighed my options and I don't want to have an abortion. I would rather give the baby up for adoption. But I mean, I don't have the right to just keep this to myself? This guy didn't hurt me, but I feel that this is my body. I did everything right. I took my birth control the same time every day, and it worked every time before we had sex, and I got my period like clockwork after every time. I didn't even use the birth control with the other guys alone. I used a condom. I just don't understand why me and why now. What should I do? I am only 19 and I was careful, so careful. No one's saying that you weren't careful, my darling, and no one's saying that you did anything wrong. Birth control is not 100% effective. Nope. There is no birth control that is 100% effective except for abstinence.
And a vasectomy. That's what I remember Dr. Prine said. The only thing a guy can do, which is can be like completely effective, is a vasectomy.
Yes,
so that's intense.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and also like you're not in a relationship, like this is like just for you. So you, yeah, you did everything right and something still went wrong. Ugh, thus it's life.
In that life, kid.
So you've already made the decision to put the baby up for adoption. And so I'm not going to try to steer you in a different direction on that. But if this baby is going to exist in the world, you got to tell the guy that he has a baby. You can't just, it is 100% your body. And I would say if you were getting an abortion, you would 100% wouldn't have to tell him, but this is a child that's going to exist on the planet.
And one day that child might want to know who his mother and father is, his or her mother and father
is. It's not as much as, you know, you don't have a relationship with this person and, you know, he did you wrong by deleting you on social media. That's the child is the one who's going to suffer here. You absolutely have to tell him if you're keeping the child that he has a child who's going to be walking around the planet who is his. 100%.
Yeah, you should tell him. Hopefully he still has his number. Hopefully it wasn't just social media and then he blocked you and you're like, well, I tried to tell you etiquette, but you had to go fucking block me on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, do whatever you can. Ugh.
It's rough, but, you know, he should know. And sorry that situation is happening, but it's going to be okay. Such is life. The next email, the subject line is, my 11-year-old constantly jerks off. Hey, ladies, love the show. A little background. I am a dad of two boys, stepdad of two others. My 11-year-old stepson is always rubbing one out. There's no attempt to hide it whatsoever. His bedroom door is glass. He can be in the middle of playing a Lego game or on the PlayStation and bam, out comes his little cock. What the hell? His poor mother has caught him dozens of times. Yesterday, we caught him out in the backyard shaking hands with the governor. His response? Sorry. Okay, I was 11, I jerked off, still do, but in my 40s, not once have I been caught. What do we do here? We don't want him to feel ashamed or like it's wrong, but I'm tired of seeing his little pecker. Thanks, keep up the great show. I think you should definitely have that conversation of, hey, what you're doing is, I don't know if he is aware of the rhetoric of masturbating and bone and erection and penis and all that stuff. I'm sure he does. But just say, this is something that is totally fine to do for your pleasure, but is a private thing. So if you do want to masturbate, just make sure you are in a private place, preferably at home. I feel like you can get in trouble jerking off in school. I could be wrong, but probably could, but he needs to know that that's something, it's a private thing. And I don't think that's shaming him. It's just that masturbating is private and it's wonderful and it's fun and it's cool. And also I hope he doesn't like shave his penis. Good God.
Well, yeah. And also just like, you think you can talk to when it was a child this small, you can talk to them about it, much like things that are going on in the bathroom, like peeing or taking shit. Neither of those things are shameful,
right?
But you're not going to take a shit in the middle of the kitchen.
Yeah.
So
very true.
You know, I think you have to just think of ways that 11-year-old is going to understand it. Obviously say poop, not shit. although I did love the amount of words that you used for masturbating and penis in this.
It's a lot of good metaphors.
Just you're the Truman Capote of masturbation writing. But yeah, just talked about it in words that he can understand. And I think it's really great. You have the good idea in your head that it's not shameful, because it's certainly not. But and also just like hygienic. It's not hygienic just masturbate anywhere. You should be washing your hands after it. Like
there's protocols to keep yourself safe.
You don't want just semen everywhere. That's not good for anyone.
Yeah. And you know, you don't want him jerking off at school or jerking off at the doctors or jerking off the supermarket. Because, you know, he's got to know that that's a private thing. That's really awesome and fun for private time. Maybe put a curtain over his glass door too.
Yeah, well, that's a weird door. Yeah. That's on you.
Is he living in the deck or something? Is he living in the sunroom?
Yeah, and
give him a room.
I truly think it's very important that, especially by, you know, 9, 10, 11, you have a bedroom that is yours where you can close the door if you are in a financial position to have your own bedroom. I think that's so important to kids to have a space where you can go in, you can close the door, and you can do your own thing.
Yeah.
So important.
Totally. So hope that helps, Dad. Okay, our guest this episode. We met her. She is a fucker. She listens to the Guys We Fuck podcast. She came out to a Glamour Push show that I had in February that was on my birthday. We had an after party. She came to that. I met her and her friend. They were really fucking sweet. I was a little drunk, so I wasn't exactly registering everything she said, but she was talking about a few subjects, one of them being her studies in Africa about genital mutilation, and I was really interested in it. Steven, my boyfriend, is also joining us on this episode because he has been to Uganda, where our guest is from, where her family is from, and has a very unique perspective on the country from his experiences in the country. So he's going to be joining us. We're really excited for you to hear this interview. She's a very smart young lady. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Luwantale Kalamara.
Take me back into the dark. Can't you see this flame was there?
Luwantale. Huh? I said it right.
Yeah.
Luwantale. Luwantale.
Wow. It's already off to a real white start.
Yeah. Luwantale. So we met you. You came to the Glamour Puss show on my birthday and to the after party at Fat Black Pussycat.
Yes,
and you were with your friend and you were telling me stories about, well, I think she was like, she knows all about genital mutilation, female genital mutilation in Africa. My and I was roommate, drunk. And I was like, Steven, she's been to Africa. I gotta go, guys. Hope you have a good time connecting. Steven is also here. Hi, Steven.
Hi.
And you guys kind of hit it off because Steven talked about his experiences in Uganda, which is where you weren't born in Uganda, correct?
No, I wasn't.
Your parents were?
Yes, I was born in the Bay Area in California, but my family's from Uganda.
Okay, and then why did they leave Uganda?
Well, it was during the time of Idi Amin's regime, and so in order for them to have like a better life and better opportunities, they had the opportunity to leave Uganda. So my mom first went to England, then she came to America, and my dad came, went to Ethiopia, and then he came to America.
And where did they meet?
They met at a party in Sacramento. It was like a party for like the Ugandans in the area.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't just happenstance that a man and a woman from Uganda were there. It was a Ugandan,
like, you know, get theme. Together party.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they got married quickly after the meeting?
Yeah. Well, they did. My mom saw my dad at the party. This is what they told me. Yeah. And so they kind of hit it off. Then my mom went back to LA and was like with her then person. But then like she and my dad really hit it off. And so at some point my dad like got his RV, like the hippie van, and drove it from San Francisco, the Bay Area, to LA, told my mom to get all her stuff. She put it in the van and then they like traveled around the US. Yeah. Stopped off in Arizona and got married there. And
that's amazing. How many siblings do you have? Is it just you?
No, unfortunately. I'm kidding. I have
sisters.
Just one. No, I'm kidding. I love her too so much. She's my older sister. She's 29 years old. And she lives in D.C. And then I have my brother, and he's 10.
Okay, cool.
And he lives in Uganda with my mom.
And how are your parents? Did they give you any sort of, like, how are they about sex? Did they talk to you about it, or was it the subject you guys don't really touch when you're together?
They don't really talk about it. It's there, but like we just don't talk about it. You know, you did the whole birth control, but then that was like very just like let's just do it and then not. Let's not focus on it when it's done.
Did like, they tell get birth control and then not
no,
talk about it?
I told my mother, like, you know,
right.
I should get birth control.
Right.
And I actually told her, don't tell my dad.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought it would be, like, a really awkward thing, like, an awkward conversation to have. But, you know, I guess she told him either way. But, like, nobody really just came out and was like, oh, so you got birth control. But, like, they... Yeah, my mom allowed it to happen and stuff, but it's very...
You're like, Mom, I'm fucking. I don't want to get pregnant.
Kind of.
Well, how old were you when you started birth control?
I started birth control when I was 19 or 20.
Okay, so I mean, at that point, you don't need your parents.
Well, I was on their insurance and stuff.
Oh, okay.
They would have found out.
Yeah. Where were you living?
I was living in Beijing at the time.
Is that when, and that's where you lost your virginity?
Yeah, so I lost my virginity. Hey, guys.
Wait, why were you in...
In Beijing?
How do you wind up in Beijing?
All right, so, well, now I have to tell you about my kind of semi-life story in order to talk about when I lost my virginity, guys. Is
okay.
That okay,
that's totally cool.
All right,
cool.
So when I was 14, my parents, they sent me to boarding school in Kenya. It was like a British boarding school. And I kind of wanted to go because, like, I loved Harry Potter. And so I thought I was going to be like that. Like, I was going to wear my blazer, get on the train, like, be part of Hufflepuff and everything. Shout out to all my Hufflepuff people. So when I got there, like, it was a lot of culture shock and stuff, but I loved it. And then in the British system, they do 5 years for high school. So I did 3 years in Kenya. Then I moved to Spain for 2 years for, like, my last 2 years of high school. And I went to Spain because I really wanted to learn about the language, and I had a fascination of anthropology, and I felt I was like a little anthropologist because I was uprooted from my life in California, moved to Kenya, like learned a bit of Swahili and understood life there, and then I moved to Spain, and then like I was learning this whole other language and immersed in another culture, and so, yeah. And so I did that for 2 years. It was difficult, but, you know.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak 4-ish.
Damn.
But, like, I'm more better. See, English sucks. No.
See, but I say that kind of thing, too, and I only know one language, so.
English is a tricky
thing. It is, right? Okay, I feel better about fucking up words all the time.
Yeah. English, Spanish, a little bit. But because I learned Chinese afterwards, and then my mother tongue, Luganda, in Uganda.
Damn.
Yeah.
So when did you, after you graduated high school, what happened?
So when I was in high school, I kind of failed, like low-key failed. So like I can't believe I'm saying that out loud to the world, but I did. And so I couldn't like immediately go to like college. So I was like, I have to do something. And so I found like a gap year situation whereby I could be a teacher's assistant at the British School of Beijing. And the school that I went to was the British School of Madrid. So yeah.
Damn.
So I applied for that and I got in. And so I did my gap year as a teacher's assistant at the British School of Beijing for a year. And then I loved China and everything was great. And then I found a university in Shanghai and I went there for 2 years. And then I transferred to my current university, which is Long Island University Global College.
Do they pay you to say that?
I went to Spain, I went to Beijing, and now I'm in Long Island.
Yeah, so how does Long Island compare to Beijing?
So now, the thing about my school, Long Island University Global College, that's the last time I'm going to say it like that.
It's all right.
It's a global college, so it's like one of its kind. So the students, they spend 3.5 years studying all over the world, like in our different centers, in Costa Rica, India, China, Australia. And then their last year, the first half of the year, they do like research wherever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last semester, which is what I'm in, you write your thesis. So my thesis is on like female genital mutilation in Uganda. So I did it during my last year of university.
Okay. Yeah. So before we dive into female genital mutilation, which you know more about than anybody I've ever spoken to, Let's go back to Beijing.
Yeah, so Beijing. So when I was 18, you know, I was getting all, I was getting paid. And, you know, it was a really interesting interesting part of my life because I had been going to boarding school and, like, someone was always on my ass about something, about, like, doing things. And so I kind of became really independent in the form of, like, getting paid and, like, paying for bills and, you know, partying and knowing when to stop and all of that. Yeah. And so, like, one day when I was partying, I was wearing, like, jeans and a t-shirt. I wasn't even looking cute or anything. I just kind of got really drunk and ended up doing the do.
Doing the do?
Yeah, in the bathroom.
That's what they say about Mountain Dew, but that's also what you say about fucking,
yeah,
huh?
Doing the do.
So you saw, was it a guy from Beijing?
No, I think he was from Angola.
Is that in?
Yeah, it's in Africa.
Okay, I was going to say, is this in Africa? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but like it was just like a random thing. And I, like all of my other friends, they had done it. And like, I was like, man, I'm like 18. I should rather just get it over and done with.
And how was it?
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was really, really bad.
What, like, was bad about it?
Like seeing the thing, like the penis,
the
just,
thing.
Just there. And
did it scare you?
It scared me. It was just... It was so awkward.
Was that your first time seeing a penis in real life?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just all the firsts at one time.
Yeah.
I was really intoxicated as well, and so I just didn't know what was going on.
Was he intoxicated as well?
Yeah.
I mean...
I hope he was.
Well, me too. I was like, me too. Sometimes it's hard to keep
really
it up when
rough.
You're intoxicated.
Yeah, no, it was up.
It was up?
Yeah. Okay. It was there.
Yeah. So you remember enough.
Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You wish you remembered less. Yeah. The image of that dick is just forever engraved
it's
in
just
your psyche.
There, yeah.
This Phantom is someone like you keep in contact that. With. Do you know his
no.
last name or no? All right. Well,
no,
that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I guess. I tell myself.
Did
that
it? Now. Was a part of you a little relieved to kind of like rip the Band-Aid off?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a virgin anymore. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
it does weigh on young women. I feel
it does, and. I ripped the Band-Aid, but, like, I feel that everyone else's story was so sweet. Like, oh, I was with my boyfriend, or I did it in the back of the car, or blah, blah, blah.
You know, and sweet stories like car backseat love.
Yeah, that's sweet.
That's
a
real
grungy
love.
Toilet
I think
in Beijing.
I think you're just letting other people's stories sound better. I don't think yours was any better or worse than backseat car.
They're usually all equally awkward.
I've done it a lot in the back of a van with my second boyfriend, and it was cute because we like had Coldplay in the background.
See?
And shit. But
you had a nice soundtrack.
I've also done it in bathrooms at bars, and I'm like, that's cool too.
Was it difficult today because you were traveling so much? Or
oh, that's a great question. Yeah, it was. I guess it. I just kind of did what I have to do and then moved on. Like I'm not really like the a person who attaches on the person because I know I'm always going to go away. But I was like that until I actually found someone that I actually cared about.
When was that?
That wasn't Shanghai.
Okay.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't that same dick in the bathroom?
No, it wasn't. No.
Yeah.
But he was. He's equally a dick. No, no.
Oh, no. Talking shade.
Yes,
what happened?
No, he knows that he didn't do a good thing. But yeah, I was with him for 2 years. This is when I was in university in Shanghai. He went to a university next to mine, and like he was like my best friend. He was my everything, and we grew together. And I guess we grew too much together, and like we were each other's people. And like I guess that gets annoying after a while. I don't know. And so, like yeah, we fought. He said he didn't love me anymore, and packed up my things and left.
Oh, have you talked to him since?
Yeah. Yeah. It actually happened a year ago.
What does he say to you still? Like, do you guys just do
I'm
small
sorry?
Talk?
Yeah. A lot of I'm sorry.
That's a little late for them. Well, so let's get into why. Oh, do you have a question?
No.
If you do, it's fine.
No, I'm like, sorry, you're young. Don't worry.
Yeah. It'll be good. Why did you want to spend so much time working on female genital mutilation, like, and having that be the topic of your thesis? And then can you go into the four different types?
Yes.
All that good stuff.
Alrighty. So I first wanted to do my thesis on the Mosuo tribe in China. So they're a tribe that is like a matriarchal. They have a matriarchal society. So the women are heads of this society. And I thought, yeah. And I thought,
but they're cutting clits off in that?
No, oh, they're God, not. No. So that's what I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to go there and live there and like kind of learn their language. And like, my thesis was like going to be about how there's like domestic violence in this society. Because I guess we always think that we always perceive domestic violence to happen in a patriarchal society, a male dominant society. So I thought, oh, what will happen if it's in a matriarchal society? So then I told my professors and they're like, no, you can't go there because you don't know the language and blah, 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 blah. And there are all these other issues. And so I cried to my mom and she was like, you know what? You should do female genital mutilation, because my sister, who is in Washington, D.C., she was like volunteering with this organization in Washington, D.C. that deals, like they talk with women victims of female genital mutilation. Yeah. And so she was doing some social work stuff there. And so she told my mom, and my mom told me that, yo, you should think about, you know, doing this. And so I'm like, okay, fine. And so, like, I just Googled it. I had no idea what it was, to be honest. Like, I knew things were cut, but I didn't really know the brevity of the situation. And so when I saw it, I was like, holy shit, like, this is real issues. And, like, I really want to know more about it. And, like, I told my mom this, and she was like, yeah, oh, yeah, we also do our own thing in Uganda. Oh, well, in Buganda, in our Buganda tribe. And then this is female genital modification, and whereby we elongate our labia minora. And I had no idea about that before.
Did she get that done, your mom?
Can you explain? Yes. I'm curious. Can you just kind of explain for Americans, when you say Buganda and
Uganda,
Uganda and then Buganda tribe, I don't think we have a perspective of tribes or any.
Alrighty. So Uganda is a country. And within this country, there are many different tribes. And so within a tribe, they have possibly a language or many different dialects of a language. They have their own cultures. Sometimes they have their own customs, clothing. So it's like little groups within an entire country. So Buganda is the largest tribe within Uganda. And so...
And that's the tribe.
That's the one I am from. Yes.
Okay. And do the tribes get along for the most part, or is there a lot of problems amongst them?
So far, to date, yes. Right now, we are getting along. Yes, we're fine. Most of the issues stem from like political. We have political, slight political instability in Uganda at the moment. Mm-hmm. But in terms of tribes, we're okay.
And Stephen was mentioning, I think you told this me this too. They speak different dialects in the tribes.
Yes.
So it's hard to communicate to each other if you're in a different tribe.
In different regions. If they're tribes and they live like farther away from each other, but still in the same region, they could have changes in their dialect as well.
And that was such a wild thing for me to understand as an American that just kind of randomly found myself in Uganda. We would go from one village literally down the road 15 miles and the translator would just be like, I don't know what these guys are saying.
Yeah, you guys are on your own.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And so why I did FGM. So I learned about everything, and so I started reading more about it. And so I realized that there's four types. So the first type is clitoridectomy. That's when they cut the clitoris and the clitoral hood. Type two is when they cut the clitoral hood and the labia minora. So that's the inner lips. And then the third type is infibulation, is when they remove the labia minora, labia majora, and the clitoris and the clitoral hood, and then they stitch it together, leaving just a small hole for menstruation and urinating.
And you can't have sex with that.
Well, you can have sex. They do deinfibulation, so they cut where if it's scarred over, they cut in order to allow the women to have sexual intercourse. So it's a gruesome practice, and unfortunately in the region that I did my research in, which was in the eastern region, I was studying the Sebei ethnic group. Women do this as a rite of passage, and womanhood? Yes, into womanhood, yeah. It's like a quote-unquote passport in order for women to be married.
And then when you're talking to the women about this, like, did they seem like they were just kind of passing on traditions, like verbally? Like, do they seem into it? What, or was it?
Is it something like, oh, grandma's lasagna recipe gets passed down every Thanksgiving? Oh, you get female, get your clitoris cut off in order to get married.
It's, like, it's comparable to a bris, you know? I mean, we do celebrate male circumcision in America.
Yeah. So.
Yes, I feel it's more like the bris.
A bar mitzvah.
The bar mitzvah.
So it's celebrated.
It is celebrated, yes. They have about 4-day celebration. It's very tight. It's tied into spirituality as well. And that's one thing we have to remember when we talk about this. When it's passed down, it's not just you get your clit cut off and all of this and then you're done. No, you also learn certain things that make you a woman in this culture. Yeah.
What are some things? Yeah.
That's one of the things that they are not allowed to tell you. They say that it's sacred, and if they do tell you, there are repercussions to them. You could go
and
crazy.
Who made up those rules?
Ancestors passed
on
from
tribal history at that point.
Yeah, it's very, very, very sacred things. And I know we could sit here and say it's horrible and all of this, and it is. I'm not saying that it isn't, but we have to understand that it's someone's culture as well. And so when we're thinking about things that have to play in part to eradicate this practice, we have to try to change people's mindsets
and get into those cultural roots of why they, because if they're so, it seems like a lot of women in Uganda are associating genital mutilation with a great, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing that it's like the stage of their life. Do you know women, didn't you say you had friends that were considering getting it or kind of excited?
Well, that's more type 4.
Oh yeah. Did you get to type 4?
No, we're still talking about type 3.
Okay. So type 3 and then type 4 is, female genital modification, and so that is any type of pricking, stretching of any part of a woman's genitalia. And then this is the one that we do in my culture in Buganda, and we do this. It happens when a girl is young, during like her preteen ages. She goes to a traditional doctor, and they have herbs and they elongate it over a period of time. It's a very painful process, but from what I've heard from some family members, you know, it increases women's sexual pleasure, possibly. That's what they say.
Well, if the only thing you're doing is stretching the vaginal lips, I mean, I can't see why it would take away from pleasure unless there's nerve damage done while the actual stretching. And you said your mother had that done.
Yes, my mother has it done. Yeah.
And did she say anything about the sexual pleasure?
She told me that there is no benefits to it when I spoke with her.
But, interesting.
Speaking with other family members, they say that
something. Did you ever have a moment where you considered having that done?
That's a great question. Yes, I did. When I first went to Uganda and I started talking to people about FGM and about the ones especially pertaining to my culture, I spoke to other Muganda women. I'm like, oh, so what is this? Like, what does it mean? And they're like, oh yeah, this is what it means to be a Muganda woman. And like, I always have a slight issue, or not an issue, or an identity issue, let's say, about where I fall. So am I an American girl, or am I a Ugandan woman, or am I a Muganda woman?
You could be an American woman.
Yeah. But the beauty of it is I'm all of these things, and at the end of my research I realized that I don't need to elongate my vagina lips in order for me to be part of this tribe.
Yeah, so it's more of an inner feeling.
It's an inner
and feeling. You getting familiar with the culture and immersing yourself in it.
Yeah.
It seems like such a conflict that in America we often think about the opposite. Like, we talk about labiaplasty and we talk about, you know, that it is, I mean, it just seems like such a strange mental conflict that we've two opposite visions of what
beauty,
right?
And
Well, the Americans sometimes will get an operation on their vaginas that has nothing to do with the pleasure, but it can negatively affect your pleasure so that they have less of an external vagina. So it's just like getting your lips like basically cut almost so that it looks like clean tucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is silly. Mm-hmm. And then in your country, it seems like they're doing that, but not for aesthetic purposes. It's more of like a, I don't know, like you're getting knighted by a woman.
I mean, is it something that men prefer, that men talk about as...
Through my research, I had the opportunity to speak with husbands of survivors of female genital mutilation. And I just want to say I mean survivors as the victims. But
okay. I was going to say, do people die during the process?
No.
Okay.
Well, yes, they do. But when I'm talking, I'm just saying in terms of the words that I'm using.
Okay.
Survivors, I mean victims of this practice.
Got it.
So when I was speaking to the husbands, they are well aware of the effects that FGM has on their wives, especially in terms of their own pleasure. The woman is not as lubricated as a woman who isn't cut is, and they are unable to enjoy sexual pleasure, and that therefore it causes issues in the marriage. But then they still abide by the culture in, you know, allowing women to have FGM happen to them.
So you have to... Culturally, it's better to get it done before you get married. You should get it, should, in quotes, get it done before you're married.
Yeah.
So presumably, too, do they encourage people to wait to have sex until they're married?
I feel that sex is still something that you have to do after marriage.
Okay. Yeah. But do they in your country, like, do they do that, too? I mean, is it traditional for most of women to wait to have sex until marriage?
It's traditional to wait, but
okay.
No.
But people do whatever they want, right?
Yeah.
But
in terms of cutting, before, long ago, it would be a rite of passage for a girl into womanhood. But during modern times, some women do get cut after being married due to the different, people. When a woman is cut, she gains a higher stance in society in this area. And so, like, if she's having issues with being, like, bullied, or the mother-in-law is not being nice to her and everything, these pressures may encourage her to go get cut.
So people respect you more?
Yes.
So it's the same thing as, like, if you're marrying a Jewish guy and then you convert to Judaism, kind of the mother-in-law will like you more. Similar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, no, there's no cutting in that. Just going naked in a big pool of water.
Ooh.
And banging through a sheet,
it doesn't,
right?
It's not as fun. That's a different kind of Judaism. There's lots of different ones.
So a lot of times, though, it seems like these married couples don't even get an opportunity at a good sex life.
And that's very unfortunate.
Oh, man. Do the guys get anything done to them?
The guys, they do have male circumcision, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
Do they get that done as kids?
It could be any time.
Oh.
Because they nowadays they say that it's better for a man to be cut in order to stop, like, spread of viruses such as HIV/AIDS. And so, yeah.
Is that true?
I don't think so.
I've never heard. I don't.
I sat there.
My gut is that that's
like,
not right.
I don't think that's right, but that's what they're saying these days.
No, a lot of these practices of the mutilation are done by, I know some are done by doctors, but some, it seems, are done by just members of the tribe.
Yes.
who have no medical background.
Exactly, and that is a horrid issue. And that's what we have to think when we're thinking about these different types of FGM. A woman who comes to cut, she's usually, the spirits tell her that she has this gift of cutting. Maybe her grandmother was a cutter, and then her great grandmother was a cutter, so therefore the spirits come and tell her. And so she has no medical background, and so who knows how much skin she's taking off. So we're here sat down saying, oh, it's type 1 or type 2, but in reality, we actually have no idea what is cut.
And what's the reason for the four different types of female genital mutilation? Is there any, like, history, or how did they come up with those four different types?
Well, I at this moment, I'm unsure about how they came up with it, but I know that there's different types due to the different countries that do this practice. So in Uganda, it's type 1 and type 2, but in Somalia, it could be type 3 or type 4.
So just kind of variations.
It varies from different countries.
How common is this? How many people are we...
Okay, so in the continent of Africa, there's 28 countries that still practice female genital mutilation. There are also countries in Asia and in the Middle East. So 140 million women in regards to the World Health Organization's fact sheets on FGM have been mutilated. And in Africa, it's 2 million women, girls each year that deal with this.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do you... I mean, I think the question that comes to mind is just why? Are there recurring themes of why would you do this, you know, religion? I mean, you said that they do it spiritually, but are there practical societal reasons? Because it's completely different. I mean, in the different types, it's... Any sex would be painful,
exactly.
Right?
But there are other reasons as to why this happens. It's not solely because of rite of passage. There is also economic wealth in this, on both ends, in terms of the cutter as well as the candidate for cutting. So now the cutter, they receive a lot of money. They receive a lot of cattle. They receive beer or anything.
So, I mean, if I was in Africa, I'd be like, someone told me to be a cutter. Someone came to me in my sleep to be a cutter.
Not general. Okay. That's not generalized as well.
Oh, okay.
In this region, in Eastern Uganda, in this ethnic group. Let's be specific. Yeah. I'm just
saying. you can get these things from
yes,
doing.
Yes, spirituality is a very sacred thing, and so they listen to the ancestors and, you know, dreams and all of this. And yes, a woman could wake up and say, yes, the spirits have told me that I should become a cutter, and so be it. So the cutters have a lot of economic benefits from this procedure, as well as the candidates. As I said, it's a ceremony, and people are just handing you money, handing you all of these things. And so if in an area where maybe there's a lack of proper income, sometimes people could be driven to, you know, do this practice in order to gain some type of wealth. And I would like to say also that there is a anti-FGM law. It's happened in 2010. And so my thesis actually was trying to understand why there was like a lack of programs for the survivors of FGM, and like how the law has affected the women who have had FGM.
Is this law in for Uganda?
Yes, it is for Uganda. And there has also been a law passed in Gambia. And quite recently, there was a law passed in Nigeria.
Oh, so the government's actively trying to stop
this. So it's not like it's a running rampant and there's no one trying to stop it. Yes.
But it's still happening.
But it is still happening. Wow. And so through my research, even though we do have the law, it happened in 2010, this has caused this practice to go underground. So people are doing it in secret. And the worst thing about this is that the women who are victims of this, they are unable to, you know, go freely to the doctor and possibly seek medical help, because the law, it criminalizes the people who are part of the process. Jeez. That criminalizes the cutters, and it also criminalizes the women who's gone through the practice.
So it's super similar to abortion here.
Exactly. Yeah. True. And I find it really counterintuitive to be imprisoning a woman who's actually gone through it. And that was one of the major questions I had through my research. I was constantly asking, what is the purpose of throwing a woman who's gone through this practice in jail? And they're like, well, it's an example. It sets an example to the population that, oh, if you do it, then you're going to go to jail. It's a very stern and it's a punishing law. And through my research, I tried to understand, like, why is the law, it needs to be punishing, obviously, but why isn't it having clauses to help these women as well? Like, you have the opportunity to write whatever you want, I guess, in the law. And so why can't we have, like, support groups or something out there for these women?
So that means that their spiritual beliefs really hold stronger than all of the potential consequences if people, modern-day women in Uganda, still want to get this done.
But is it, I mean, what's the common age for the different types, usually?
Different
types of mutilation. I mean, are they like 7, 13?
All right. So in Uganda, in the eastern region, among the Sebe, there's only type 1 and type 2 that happen. And so kids are cut usually between the ages of 10 to 15, so preteen age. Yeah.
So they're not usually making a... Are they aware of what they're doing? Is it something that they want to do, or is it something that their parents...
Well, imagine if you were out there and, you know, you have like older sisters or older friends that are like dressing up and like having a party and like dancing and everything's going great and they're getting ready to go and do this really cool ceremony that's going to make them into a woman. Mm-hmm. Like in, yeah, why wouldn't in your, you? Yeah, in a young state, you'll be like, yeah, I'm about to go do it. Like, but you don't really know like what's actually going to happen to you. You don't know the negative effects, the consequences that you will be dealing with. But then nowadays in modern society, women are going to get this procedure done after marriage, and so it's quite interesting. It varies. It's a very
but do the women that have it done very young feel resentful because they don't get that sexual satisfaction? They don't get that, you know, the kind of, I mean, do they have no, is sex still pleasurable? And if it's not, do they wind up, I would be so upset.
Yeah, well, I wonder if
as an adult.
But like, you just, you never know something that you.
I was going to say, you don't know what they're missing. You don't know how good an orgasm feels if you've never had one.
Exactly.
Because I know my coworker is actually from Tanzania, and she has a friend in Connecticut who is a survivor of genital mutilation, and she's married, and she's like, I could have sex for like 8 hours, and like, I can go all night because, not that it's painful, she just basically doesn't feel anything. It's kind of like, you know, putting like a key in a hole or something. Like, just you can keep doing it without really any. So that's, no, it seems like even you are a bit torn about it, because before when we were talking, you were like, you know, keep in mind this is a tradition and this is very spiritual, but yet then you still refer to these people as victims and survivors. So it's like, how do you stand on it after all your research?
I firmly believe that it is not a beneficial practice. It has no health benefits in either way. More so, a woman's pleasure is taken away. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that a woman is able to grow up not knowing, as you said, what an orgasm feels, not having that liberation and all of that. But in order to change this or in order to fix, not fix the problem, but to stop this from happening, we have to be mindful of the type of culture that is there.
You still have to respect their culture to get in.
Yeah, you have to respect the culture, but work with what you have in order to change it as well.
I think it's more about educating, would you say?
Educating, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true, but using the language that they use and... Yeah.
Right, because you don't want to talk down to people. This is things that have been going on for a long time. You don't want to just like bust in and be like, yo, this is stupid and you're dumb and this isn't progressive and we're going to change everything.
Yeah, and that's not the way to go about it. And with the law and everything, I feel that that's how it's going about the situation. The law is fantastic. It's a great stepping stone. It has allowed for different sensitization programs. These are programs to educate the population to stop FGM. They've worked with churches, you know, they work with the elders in the community to stop it. And this is great. However, I feel that we need to start working on the local level and speak the language that the people in the local community speak.
So are you saying like these laws were created by people who are just like of a different social and economic status, so they're not really like living the life that these people in these tribes, so it's kind of like they're creating a law for a life they know nothing about? Or because there are laws created by people in Uganda, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like, you know, it's not like so much white people coming in.
No.
Right. I'm like, because I'm just like, so it's the same.
It's the same, of course, the same people.
Right.
However, it's like the different, there's urban areas and there are rural areas. And
right.
Through my research, that these are the two different areas that I was studying. In the urban areas, people are more respective to the law because, yes, they're educated. Mm-hmm. Yes, they understand, like, you have to abide by the law. The law is there for a reason. Mm-hmm. They understand the health issues and everything. However, when I went to the rural areas, all of these things were not, they're not concrete. They're like, oh, you know, they're just saying these things, but it doesn't resonate as much in the rural areas that it does in the urban areas. Literacy can play a part, but also, I mean...
The different languages, too, would you say?
That's true as well. The law is not formally written in the Kupsabe, which is their traditional language. However, there are documents that are translated into their language. However, some people may not be able to read or something.
Jesus. So. Yeah, I mean, these problems mirror problems that are happening all over the world. Educated, more educated, wealthier people creating laws that are really hurting people at the bottom.
Exactly.
I mean, this is just everywhere. Now, and for, what was I going to say? Do you think the people, these Ugandan laws were made because...
Sounds like a good question.
It was a good question, and I totally forgot it. And also, is Ugandan that? Is that the proper way to use that?
Yeah, Ugandan.
Like a Ugandan law.
Ugandan, yeah.
I'm like, is it Ugandanian? No, I just guessed Ugandan.
Ugandanese.
And yeah, exactly. Now, do you think, what was the reason for them creating these laws? Like, do you think it was purely because for health reasons? Was it for economic reasons?
And I'm also curious, how does it's the government, how does Christianity and kind of tribal beliefs balance out in Uganda? I mean, is there crossover or just religion in general? I mean, are there different religions? How does that break down? What does it look like?
These are awesome questions, and I'm going to answer hers first, and then we'll come to yours. So your question was, I forgot.
No, what was the reason for them creating this laws? So were they truly worried about the women's health? Was it, usually, you know, that's like a money thing when it's a law a lot of times. But I just was curious if you had any background on that.
All right. So in the constitution in Uganda, it does say that citizens are allowed to practice their own forms of traditional cultural practices. However, there is a clause there that says, no, you cannot practice a traditional cultural practice if it harms someone. And so in this case, it does. It harms. It's very detrimental to a woman's health.
Is that only physical or can that include mental harm?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a great question.
I'm just very mental. I mean, you think you're a woman now because you're having this procedure done, but then, I mean, I don't know.
Even in a larger scale, like, does it pertain to mental health as well?
Well, just so often psychological needs are overlooked.
And also, what does mental health look like? I mean, the place, when I went to Uganda, I was in northern Uganda. And so it just, what does mental health even look like in a village?
Do they pay mind to
it? Or are they just thinking about survival health?
Mental health, in the Ugandan context, there is a mental health hospital, but we do not have the proper resources, I feel, yet, or the proper understanding as a country as to how detrimental mental health is to human beings. And so mental health is also could be seen as having evil spirits, and people focus more on that than on the fact that there is actually a chemical imbalance.
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, exactly. And so this whole idea of spirits and like bad omens and bad juju is a big thing in society, and it kind of overlooks the real issue.
But sometimes to someone who, like, everyone in the tribe thinks they have bad spirits, like, they might just be a schizophrenic. And that's just, like, a different way of talking about it.
Yes, but it's not the same way as here. Like, when someone's schizophrenic, you just maybe give them therapy.
Have medication.
Everything's going to be fine. But there, it's like, oh, no, you know, this person has evil spirits. Let's go pray for them. And I feel that's something we still, as a country, I hope, are going to continue working on and gaining more sensitization and all of that, and learning more about mental health so we can deal with it in a proper way.
Going back to the genital mutilation topic, I wanted you to talk about really quick that one hospital for the transgender woman.
There's that.
Was such a beautiful story.
And I don't know a lot of information. It was just one instance.
So got to speak with her?
I did get to speak with her, but it was just like on the off chance. But there was...
What's her deal?
There was a transgender woman.
From Uganda?
Yes.
Okay.
Transgender man, I think.
Was she born a man or born a woman?
She was born a woman.
Okay, and so then transitioned to a man. So transgender man. Okay.
Sorry.
No, no, it's okay. It can be confusing.
You have to leave now, actually.
To the most open-minded of people.
I understand. I'm very sorry and I apologize.
No.
We aren't naming the right countries in your continent.
But like, you know,
so
people are listening and I don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable.
No, I want everyone to feel uncomfortable. No, it's not nice, but it's important.
But I think that's what's so interesting.
You learn more from being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And also just, I mean, keeping up with the pronouns, like the respect is there, but sometimes I can't, like I'll accidentally say the wrong pronoun. And I don't mean anything against it. Just work with me. I'm trying to learn.
Yeah. Plug to watch Patton Oswalt's new special.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, what's that?
He's just a comedian and he talks a lot about that in it and it's fabulous.
Okay, yeah, it's a great bit on pronouns. And so does Bonnie McFarlane. But anyway, transgender man.
I met her at a party
where?
In Kampala, yeah. It was a group of people that like worked at like UN Women and they were like having a bar crawl and so I just went.
Because you gotta have fun every once in a while, right? You know.
And so got out of the house that day. And I just spoke to her and she was telling me that her and like a group of other
It's hard for all of us.
Friends of theirs were going to create like an organization for people to be more understanding about who they are and what they represent. And I just found it very fascinating because in Uganda, we have very strong laws on gay rights and all of that. Well, there's no gay rights in Uganda. Yeah. And it's very unfortunate. And it's also another thing that we have to work on as a country.
It's illegal to be gay.
It is illegal.
I'm gay, right?
Do you go to jail for life if you're caught?
I don't know about the sentencing, but...
That's so fucking horrible. And then if
a person isn't able to live freely in their own country, that's jail enough, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, that was very wise.
That was wise.
At least that was only one wise thing I said, guys.
You said lots of wise things.
Gotta put that in there.
No, what's it like to be a transgender man in Uganda? Like, I mean, is there one and we all know him and like everyone knows in Uganda if they heard this podcast who we're talking about? Is this...
No,
I'm saying, but literally, like, is it so not common that if we are talking about this, everyone's like, oh, I know that guy.
It's like Bob.
Oh, Dave. I mean, that's ballsy as fuck.
Yeah, but it's still a very sensitive topic.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. If homosexuality is illegal, I cannot imagine the brutality that's brought against trans people. That's fucking horrible. But this trans man that you met, he operates... Is he a doctor or he works
that's something else. That was another part of our conversation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there is a trans woman.
Currently a woman? Currently a woman?
Yeah.
Okay, so trans woman.
Damn it. I'm sorry. trans woman, a lovely woman. She is doing clitoral repairs. And so I'm currently trying to figure out how to... be in talks with her to possibly create a pleasure hospital or a clitoral repair hospital in Uganda. Just provide that service, maybe by teaching gynecologists in the country how to do it. The procedure only takes about, I guess, 2 weeks for a skilled gynecologist to learn.
Do you get your clip back? What happens?
So the beautiful thing about the clitoris, guys, is that it's a lot more than we play with. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, well,
it's deeper in your body.
Yeah, it's deeper in our body. Anyone who's listening to this right now, I just want to have a plug for clitorises. Like, go.
I don't think you're going to need to plug clitorises on this podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by clitoris. Clitori.
Google it. It's amazing. It's a larger organ, and it... I don't have a diagram here, but...
She's pointing down towards her vagina.
Yes. What we play with and enjoy all the time is the gland. And so it's just a little part of the clitoris. So what they can do is they can pull the nerves within us out and create another.
Oh, it's part. Like when you lose your string in your hoodie. This is great.
Exactly.
And oh my God.
I was going to say like a starfish.
Fucking amazing.
And you just,
So you just pull it back out a little more.
Yeah, it's more complicated than
that. I'm sure
it's
more complicated than that. Yeah.
Don't start pulling your clits out, guys.
Yeah. There's like other things.
But thank God there's something that can be done to to give women back pleasure.
Pleasure, yeah. And it's a fascinating thing. And I was so happy when I found it. And I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Yes, guys.
Pull the clits back.
Just like throw clitorises out.
Yeah. You we're having this. Yeah, you get a clit and you get a clit. So the Oprah of clits.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
Now, are women who don't, like, so it seems like this, the female genital mutilation process is very important in some of these tribes. So is there, are women stigmatized who don't get it done? Like, oh, you are not a woman. You did not pass go, did not collect $200.
Get $200. Yeah. That's funny. It depends on where this woman is in this society. So, if she's in the urban area where women are more educated and women can go and get schooling and know that FGM is detrimental to a woman's health, then they're not going to be seen as like a girl or anything. But if she's in an area, maybe in the rural area where there's no literacy and cultural traditions are law there, then she will be seen as a girl and she will not be able to live efficiently, an efficient life there. And she will be ridiculed by the people around her.
Will the guys not want to have sex with her?
Yeah, she will be seen as a child. She will not be a woman. And there's various things a woman can do in the rural area, such as like collect water and maybe get the materials needed to build homes. And I know this may seem very like not much to us, but in this rural communities, it's something that is major. But
well, so she would be dependent on other people to get water.
Yes.
Or, okay, so that's huge.
Or she will just be the last person to go get
because
water.
She still has her clit.
Because she still has her clit. And,
oh damn!
But times are changing, and I have hope that hopefully someone out there like myself is going to be able to go to these rural areas and educate people in the fact that this is not a great cultural tradition.
You were talking to me about how you kind of wanted to start a non-for-profit organization to help, because after we had that initial conversation, you, me, and Steven, I was like, how can I help? Like, can I donate money directly to somewhere or what? So you're thinking of starting a nonprofit for women in Uganda or African countries that still practice female genital mutilation?
Yes. So I'm graduating university on Thursday.
Congrats.
Yeah. So you'll be graduated by the time this comes out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, congrats to me.
Yay, congratulations.
You did it.
Woo!
Finally. I would like to take like possibly 6 months out to start creating the foundations to my organization. I'm still trying to figure out if I want to have it registered here or in Uganda. Mm-hmm. But I will keep you guys posted.
Yeah.
If anybody cares or wants to talk about
it. I was
going
to say, is there something you don't know about how to start the organization? Or is there any obstacles you're currently facing? Because if anybody out there listening works for non-for-profit, and I know they do because they've emailed us before.
Oh, really?
And maybe they have some knowledge they want to drop. They can. Is there anything, steps in the process that you're... I mean, I know nothing, so I don't know where you're at, but I'm sure you know a lot more than me.
Well, the beauty of this is I have all the information about what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because I've written this thesis over and over again for like the past few months. But in terms of creating the organization myself, I haven't really had the time to sit down and think about those processes. But I mean, anyone who can help in terms of mentorship or in terms of just some type of guidance.
We'll put you in touch. My good friend started Marriage Equality USA. We'll put you, I know lots of people, and Grant, who was on this episode, also is a big not-for-profit person. So we'll put you in contact with lots
of people.
That would
be very lovely.
People. It's more like LGBTQIA stuff, but I think it's in the same family.
Definitely.
For sure.
So. And also, like, when I go back to Uganda and I find that person that I talk to, that would be a nice person for them to.
Yeah.
Speak to as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if anyone has any information to help, please email in at sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We'll forward that to you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations on graduating college.
Thank you so much.
That's such a huge, exciting step in your life.
Thank you.
You're such a well-rounded young woman.
I'm so proud to know you.
No, you're not.
I don't even know.
But that's normal. You feel like a hot mess. You ain't a hot mess. You're 23. Honestly. If you didn't, something would be wrong. If you thought you had
you're managing to meet really interesting people at parties, if nothing else.
Yeah, I know.
And you speak four languages. I mean, is there anything you want to ask?
I am a little curious. I know you want to wrap up, but what does a sexual conversation look like in Uganda? What does the concept of sex education? How do people learn about sex? How do people think about protected sex?
I feel that's a great question. First of all, I want to, like, can I throw questions out to
our audience? Yeah.
Like, if anyone knows, like, an answer to that, that would be
well,
great.
We have,
but, like,
we
because
have emails from men and women of that region.
And because I grew up here and also in all these other countries, so I don't know firsthand how people, you know, perceive sex and learn about sex, but from my research, sexual education is very, very low. Yeah. And it's more towards abstinence and, like, don't touch a boy until you're married, and that's not sexual education. And that's one thing as a country I feel that we need to learn about sexual education, telling people to not touch people, or you know, HIV AIDS and wearing condoms, and that is needed, but I feel people need to start learning about their anatomy and, like, know the different parts of it, and men and women, girls and boys should equally know about that. And yes, abstinence could be great for some people, and using condoms is fantastic, but we need to start learning doing other things as well, I feel.
Yeah, and then develop a sense of, like, a respect for sexuality and your own sexuality and the sexuality of others.
But I think I'm curious even more just in your conversation with friends when you're in Uganda, you know, do they, because you're very worldly and progressive sexually. I mean, just from our conversations, we kind of know where you're at. And that's where the podcast is at. But when you say things like that in Uganda, do people look at you side? I mean, I've really been kind of mind blown that the people reach out to us from Africa and that they find the podcast in Africa and they have all these
questions. I find that beautiful as hell.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really cool. Are there threesomes in Uganda?
I'm pretty sure they are, and they're banging.
Yeah.
I have, like, sex clubs and stuff?
Hell yeah. No, I don't know.
You don't know?
But, like, I'm pretty sure they're out there. It's just that, like, we're very quiet about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's haven't been outlets yet that allow us to express these things. But I'm so happy that there are girls or boys out there that are writing emails to you. Because it's like, yeah, we're all going through it. We're all humans. And, you know, we all love sex.
And
it's just
you can't keep
ways
any human oppressed, big or small. Like, when it comes to their sexuality, their sexual preferences, anything, what you can and cannot do as a career. It's like anytime the human soul is hindered in any way, it's going to manifest and explode eventually.
Exactly.
It's like alcohol. We'll always find a way to get it.
And most of the people, like, that I hang out with in Uganda, like my friends, they've, like, all studied abroad as well. And so they have a more Western, quote unquote, approach to sexuality and all of that. So
cool.
It's not much difference. But yeah, thank you so much, you guys. And
thank you.
I have no idea what I've said for the past 30 minutes.
Well, past hour.
I blacked out.
Do you want people to be able to contact you if they want to follow up with anything? Or
definitely, yes.
Where can we do that?
Please.
We could get emails and forward them to you, or if you want to give out info. Like,
you could find me on Facebook. Is that a thing?
Facebook is a thing.
Luan Tale Kalamera. And I guess, like, when you click listening to this podcast on SoundCloud, you could see my name. Will my name be there?
Yeah.
Can you spell your name?
Okay. LWAN as in Nancy, TALE. And my last name is Kalamera, KALEMERA. Kalamera, not Kalamari. Just making sure.
White people out there. Christina.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for your information and all the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Thank you.
This has been Guys, We Fucked, the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.